Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods book, the 1980 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, mythological beings, and heroes that I find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. This is the second episode of our series about Chinese mythology. In the last episode, I talked about some of the kind of overall shape of this section, about some of the particular challenges and sources involved, and we talked about the supreme deity, Shangdi. In this episode, we're going to take a look at three very different deities, and we're also going to confront some of the difficulties that I talked about last time in terms of the sources and the research behind this section. So, let's get started. Now, I've mentioned before that this section uses the older Wade Giles system of romanization, that is, of translating Chinese characters into the Latin alphabet. And what that means is that the names, as I'm about to pronounce them, may seem very different from the way they appear in the book. I'm no expert, but I understand that that is why Wade Giles is now largely superseded. So we're going to start off with Zhao Gongming. Zhao Gongming is listed here as the demigod of war, and I can see why you would understand him that way. You know, he rides around on a tiger, he is armed with an iron rod, not a sword. As appears in his entry here. He's usually depicted carrying an iron rod. He has kind of a fierce appearance, like a determined, scowling expression, and a long black beard. And I mean, you know, riding on a tiger, that's a pretty ferocious thing to do. And indeed, he has kind of a military title. He's sometimes referred to as Zhao Gong Yuan Shuai, which means, so Gong, I guess, just means something like lord or prince. And Yuan Shuai, as we will see, is a military rank, marshal. So, Lord Zhao the Marshal. And so, you could understand him as a demigod of war, that would make sense. However, he's really, I mean, he's a military man, certainly, but he's actually an aspect or incarnation or expression of the god of wealth, Zai Shen. And the story goes that, Zhao Gongming was a Taoist hermit who, I've mentioned before, the idea of the fall of the Shang dynasty, and Zhao Gongming used his magical powers to help attempt to preserve the Shang, and even though ultimately the Shang dynasty did fall, he was later on deified. He was assassinated, and then later on he was listed among the deities. Now there are two translations of his full title, which are slightly different from each other, but I'm going to go with the one that seems a little... One of them is cooler, and one of them seems more plausible. So, here's the cooler one. True Lord of the Golden Dragon of Wish Fulfillment and the Dragon Tiger Altar of Orthodox Unity. Whereas this other one is Marshal Zhao, Preserver of the Law of the Supreme Purity and the Orthodox Unity on the Mysterious Altar with the Flying Tiger and Golden Wheels. And he is sometimes just known for short as Zhao Xuantan, or Mysterious Altar. Yeah, so Mysterious Altar, that's pretty good, huh? Although I expect that it's mysterious in a religious sense rather than, like, in a, you know, investigation sense. Anyway, so yeah, he's a god of wealth, and he's a martial god of wealth, a martial aspect of the god of wealth. And he has four assistants who are pretty much what you'd expect to be the assistants of the god of wealth. They're the god of attracting wealth, the god of collecting treasures, the god of collecting valuables, and the god of profitability. And in addition to being the god of wealth, he also has other attributes, including preventing diseases, warding off natural disasters, and correcting unjust judgments. So, all in all, he seems like a pretty good guy. And his iron staff has the power to turn other objects into gold. Now, I want to go ahead and say that Zhao Gongming, the kind of martial-ish protective god of wealth, is much more interesting than Zhao Gongming, you know, another war god, particularly since on the next page, we're going to get a war god who you don't really need another after you have him. He's great. So, I feel like having more than one war god in a pantheon is fine. The Greeks got away with it, no problem. But it does help if, you know, they're an interesting contrast in some way, and one of them isn't just a substantially better and more suitable war god than the other. So I do like the idea that obviously Zhao Gongming is this, like, not a composite, but he's a wonderful example of the way in which actual religion struggles against this kind of D&D-like categorization. Even Greek mythology, which is arguably where this comes from, resists the idea of being like, oh yeah, you know, Poseidon's the god of the sea, you know, Poseidon is the god of the sea and horses and earthquakes. So we can say that Zhao Gongming is a martial character, but still he's an expression of the god of wealth, and if that seems weird, well, then that's great. Also, I just love thinking about what a paladin of Zhao Gongming would be like, right? Because we normally think of paladins as having sort of like very simple and, you know, they obviously have expensive weapons and armor, but other than that, you know, they live humble, frugal lives. They, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, in silent prayer and contemplation. But what if you were a paladin of the god of wealth? What if you were a cleric of the god of wealth? Cleric of the god of wealth sounds like an amazing member of an adventuring party, right? What god do you serve? God of collecting treasures? You're in. One thing that we haven't seen a lot of in the mythologies that we've studied are gods who are focused on kind of like the concerns of civilized life. So in Finnish mythology, we saw deities who were very largely kind of nature deities. And even in Sumerian mythology, we saw a lot of gods who were concerned with like big cosmic principles or very fundamental society-building stuff, like being the god of agriculture. But here we're going to find a group of deities, and actually there are more that, you know, didn't really wind up being included, who are deities whose role is to, first, to protect and preserve. A lot of protective deities in this section, even some who are kind of marketed as other than protective deities, and a lot of deities who are concerned with sort of like the good things in life, if that makes sense. And I feel like Zhao Gongming is one of them. He's a god of wealth, and with none of the kind of negative implications that you might get in like a view of religion influenced by Christian thinking that, at least on paper, rejected that kind of materialism. So yeah, I want to take Zhao Gongming and expand him from merely being a demigod of war who rides on a tiger and hits people with a sword to being a demigod who rides on a tiger and wards off natural disasters and is the god of wealth. You know, the god of prosperity. I feel like there's definitely a role in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign world for these, you know, ornately armored, splendid clerics of the god of wealth, you know, going from town to town and, like, protecting communities and their treasures and, like, finding more and, you know, offering up all this gold to their god. Like, I feel like, I mean, not as a joke, like, not as a gag character. I think that's a really good idea. Okay, so I feel like Zhao Gongming, like, that's the Zhao Gongming we know and love, but he's kind of like his version in the Deities and Demigods book. He's going to be a little bit simplified, and I feel like simplified in a way that takes away some of the fun things about him. But this next one, hoo boy. When I started researching the various deities in this book, there were some cases where it was easy to figure out who they're meant to be, and there were some cases where it really isn't. There are actually still one where I still don't know who this character is supposed to be. But this guy, this one took a little work. So this person is listed as Chi Cheng Fu Ya. When I searched for this, all I could find was people saying, what is this nonsense? Who is this guy in the Deities and Demigods book supposed to be? You can't say Fu in Chinese. Like, there's no romanization system, you know, that has F-Y-U in it. And then when, as I said before, Tom McGrenery offered some valuable advice on the Chinese pronunciation in this section, and he confirmed that, and he said the same thing. So what I did was I then went and I took the text of Werner's Myths and Legends of China, and I just searched it for that first part of the name, Chi Cheng. And I did find one. And in fact, it looks to me like Chi Cheng Fu Ya is a typo for Chi Cheng Zi Yu, who is, well, we'll get to who that is in a second. So in Wei Giles, that would have been rendered TZU hyphen U. So someone has looked at the T and thought it was an F, at the presumably cursive Z and thought it was a Y, and at the U in the second part and thought it was an A. So I'm going to put this character down to bad handwriting. So who is Chi Cheng Zi Yu? He is another name for the deity more commonly known as Ho Yi, the heavenly archer, the divine archer, also called Shen Yi, or just Yi. And he is a pretty great guy, although he does not in any way resemble this creature that's being described here. So I can only assume that someone wrote down Qijiang Ziyu, that somebody wrote down this name of the guy, they put it in the book, and then much later they're like, oh man, I don't remember him at all. And so they just made up all this stuff about he's a diabolical figure who punishes people. I mean, maybe that's in Runner, but I haven't seen it. I haven't read the thing cover to cover. And in general, one of the trends, one of the ways in which the Deities and Demigods book seems to kind of misinterpret Chinese mythology, or intentionally make changes to Chinese mythology, is that it tends to introduce more kind of like hostile figures. Because Ho Yi is not a bad guy, necessarily. Well, he's not really a bad guy at all. Ho Yi is most famous for shooting down a number of suns. That's suns with a U. So there was a time when there were too many suns in the sky and it was too hot, and Ho Yi shot them all down with his bow and arrow, except for one, which is the correct number of suns, and everything was better. He's also probably most famous for being married to the moon. He was, I guess, I mean, again, there are different versions of this story, but he was an immortal who had taken on a human form and shot down the suns. And so he was rewarded by the Queen Mother of the West with a drug that would restore his immortality. But either through malice or inadvertently, his wife took the drug herself and became immortal. And she goes and lives in the moon. And I believe he lives in the sun. And so he's always pursuing her kind of thing. You know, he wants her back. But she had to be separated from him because, you know, because she was an immortal. She couldn't live on Earth anymore, I guess. Either that or she thought he would be mad because she took his magic immortality medicine. So she went to go live in the moon, which seems like an overreaction. But, you know, the impression I get is that he is kind of almost a secondary character to her. But that, maybe, I don't really know. Anyway, he's the divine archer, and therefore, I think makes, you know, a good patron for certain types of D&D character. He seems to be someone who, like, a lot of other stories are about him, you know, fighting against monsters who appear to be personified natural disasters. So he's definitely a character who has this kind of aspect of being a protective figure who uses his archery skills to, you know, to keep the community safe. So, you know, a pretty good role model for a fighty type character. Now, the character that exists in this book, this guy who punishes offenses against the gods and is like a fearsome demon-looking guy, I'm not aware that he's based on any particular character from Chinese mythology, but it's not a bad role to have in a fantasy role-playing game. Like, the gods could definitely do with a heavy sometimes. I guess it depends on whether you're tending to have this be the setting against which the characters are likely to transgress, or a setting where the characters are going to be the ones maintaining that order. Because if it's the latter, then I would say that you almost don't want a divine heavy in your game, because that is the role that PC clerics and paladins are supposed to play, right? Oh, someone has been committing offenses against the gods and desecrating temples. Dust off your holy Avengers. It's time to go deal with some bad folks. So, in that respect, maybe not. And having a divine punisher god always seems a little harsh on the players who are likely to be the ones who've offended the gods, right? The gods are pretty much tough enough. You know, if you have offended Shang-Di, he doesn't, I mean, I guess he'd send his boy after you, but again, he's probably got a whole hierarchy that he can use to carry that out. I don't know. I do like the idea that this guy is someone who, you know, goes and punishes people who've offended the gods. I have no idea where it came from, but it's not a bad role as long as it's kind of carried out in moderation. You would have to do something really blasphemous. You certainly don't want that kind of high school D&D thing where you do something and the DM's like, ha ha, you offended against this temple. Now a big bat demon guy is going to come and shoot you full of arrows and you're dead. So one thing that we've seen in both of these deities so far is that they have a human aspect. Again, I'm not an expert, but I think the idea is that Qijiang Ziyu is the name that he had when he was a human, and now he's called Ho Yi, or that he was really Ho Yi, but he chose to live as Qijiang Ziyu. I don't really know. And, of course, that Zhao Gongming was also a human being who was deified. I mean, he lived at this kind of legendary time, right? I don't think that there's any evidence for a historical Xiaogang Ming. Obviously, the Shang Dynasty, you know, that's a historical thing, but at the same time, the stories about the end of the Shang Dynasty and its replacement are, you know, pretty much legendary, or indeed mythological. Both of these deities blur the line between human and divine, and in many ways, I think we can see them both as, you know, examples of that tendency in Chinese mythology, as is the next one, maybe. But also, for adventurers looking to become deified, I do think it's interesting to see that Xiaogang Ming became a god, even though he was not successful, right? The Shang Dynasty did fall, and he died, but he did his best. Or, you know, he demonstrated such great powers or integrity or whatever during that conflict that he was nonetheless deified. Finally, we have Chisongzi. Now, he is, again, a character who is known in this book by maybe his less common name. He is more commonly called Yu Shi, and he is a rain god. Yu Shi literally means Lord of Rain, and Chisongzi means, I've seen it translated both as Master Red Pine and Red Pine Boy. Chisongzi is like a mischievous figure almost, or maybe like a rowdy figure. He participated in a rebellion against Huang Di. Again, this is one of those things where kind of like a historical event and a mythological one become conflated, because this is a story that involves like both historical personages and like dragons and giants and, you know, various gods. And together with the wind god, he allies with the baddie, you know, eventually is subdued and kind of brought back into the fold. This is something that we're going to see from other kind of elemental deities in this section, that they are seen as people who kind of can break out of the bounds of what you're supposed to do, that they, you know, rebel against the emperor. You know, that kind of fits with the idea of a rain god. You know, if you're a farmer or whatever, then obviously you want the rain god to be on your side, but you've got to be very clear that he's a challenging and capricious character, and that he might be, you know, he might not do what you want him to do or expect him to do. And that seems to be the case here. He is often depicted with the body of like a silkworm cocoon and with snakes coming out of his ears. And also he carries a snake in each hand sometimes. So he's a bit of a monstrous figure there. The symbol given in his section here, this one-legged bird, is a creature called a Shangyang, which is a bird whose appearance, it appears and it does a little dance on its one leg. And if that happens, then that means that heavy rain is going to come. That's just kind of that's fun actually. I like there's a little sort of piece of trivia in there in his symbol section that's, you know, that is based on a story from Chinese legend and is not further explained. That's kind of neat. It's just like a portent that there's going to be rain. So yeah, Chisongzi is a good one. Like he fits a little more with the conception of nature deities that we've seen in, you know, some of these other mythology sections, again, with the idea that these are cultures that are very well aware of how capricious and dangerous nature can be. And in particular, we've seen this preoccupation before in Chinese mythology with flooding and the dangers of having too much or not enough rain. I mean, this is a really weird story in which the drought goddess is the hero. She's one of the people responsible for taking down Chisongzi when he rebelled against Huang Di. And that's interesting. I feel like Chisongzi fits quite neatly into most D&D campaigns. You could definitely have situations where there were natural disasters being caused basically because Chisongzi was feeling his oats. Or, you know, there were portents of disaster, like the rainbird had appeared, and something had to be done in order to prevent, you know, such and such a thing from being washed away. That story about Chisongzi rebelling against the emperor comes from The Classic of Mountains and Seas, a book about which we shall have reason to speak in the future. All right, so that's about it for this episode of Patron Deities. Please join me next time as we talk about Zhong Kui, who is not necessarily as he's described here, Fei Lian and Fong Popo, same story, and the one I know you've all been waiting for, Guan Di, the God of War. Next time on Patron Deities, show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.